Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports on Global Patriot Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, the second day of February 2022. And we got some good stuff going on this week. That was Peak Hour by the Moody Blues. That's my class music. Makes me sound like I'm on the BBC. Elsewhere on Global Patriot Radio, Mondays we have Vito Esposito Show with Big Al at 6 o'clock Eastern. Tuesdays, the Cross and the Crescent discussion with Eric, also at 6 o'clock Eastern. Thursdays, the Sutliffian Report with Paul Sutliff. Paul also goes at 6 o'clock. All those are Eastern time. Fridays, Andrew Herod in with Conservative Casual Friday. Seems to be pretty consistent right now at noon Eastern time. Saturday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie, of course, revealing the truth about Islam. Sunday nights or Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock Eastern time, Eric is back with the real interfaith dialogue. And, of course, every Wednesday, 5:30, me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Other shows across the spectrum. Holger's come back. I don't know if he's got anything this week, but a week or two ago he came back with his awakening. Holger awakens. Good stuff. Holger is long time on here, but lately just been a guest on other people's shows, but he keeps his blog going. Holgerawakens.blogspot.com. He also got Bigfoot with bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Annie with Southern Sense Radio. She goes several different days here on Blog Talk Radio. The America Airwaves, the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show, Friday nights at 7. I'm not sure they're going right now. I know G-Ski's had some challenges health-wise. But all good stuff. Tim Tapp, of course, Tap into Truth. Joseph Gibson, Understanding the Times We Live In. All good Blog Talk Radio shows that come on, not all part of Global Patriot, but all on Blog Talk here. If you want to contact us, off show, hjpsports1980@gmail.com, at hpolysports there on Twitter, and on Facebook, just type in Hank Jones Polysports. If you want to interact with the show during the show, dial 319-527-6706. You can listen that way, or you can go online and come in through the chat room. If you're listening and you'd like to talk, something grabs at you, hit the one on your phone. I get the icon. Anyway, we've got a lot of good stuff today. My wife and little Aussie are here in the house at Electric Hankland Studios. Little Aussie's pretty docile because we fed her a little bit ago. She tends to crash for a bit after that, but later on, yeah, she'll be rocking and rolling. She's always ready to go. To the obituaries. Last Wednesday, we lost TV actor Morgan Stevens. He was on The Waltons. He actually married Elizabeth Walton's character, I think. Or maybe it was Aaron. It was Aaron Walton. He was also on Fame, Melrose Place. Yeah, his body was discovered in his Los Angeles area kitchen after a wellness check was requested. He was 70. We also lost Janet Mead, a.k.a. Sister Janet Mead. She was the Australian nun. She rose to number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1974 with her pop rock version of the Lord's Prayer. Remember, Our Father who art in heaven. Yeah, she did that. Like Catholics and Episcopalians and other Orthodox and some Protestant denominations, she used trespasses instead of debtors. Yeah, as a born and bred Presbyterian, I can sort of explain the difference. Most folks are concerned with their land, while the Presbyterian types, as I was raised, have their roots in Scotland, so they're a little more concerned with the money aspect of it, I guess. Yeah, anyway, when I visit a church that uses trespasses, No, I do not follow the When in Rome school. I go with debts and debtors, and I actually speed it up a bit so that I'm done before everyone else. It's really cool, except for Catholics, because they cut out the part where for thine is the kingdom, etc. So it's pretty much neck and neck for me and Catholic, my Catholic pals. But otherwise, yeah, I'm a good verse ahead of you by the time you finish. Thursday, we lost. We we societally put to death convicted killer Matthew Reeves at age 44. He was put to death by lethal injection. He was convicted as the shooter in the death of Willie Johnson Jr. in Selma, Alabama. That was the day before Thanksgiving in 1996. Yeah, the execution was controversial for several reasons, not the least of which was Reeves' legal team alleging that he was intellectually disabled. In addition to that, he was fingered as the shooter by both his brother and a woman that was with them at the time. So, yeah, kind of controversial. That day we also lost former major leaguer Gene Kleins. Cause was not listed, but Gene Kleins was 75. He had stints with the Pirates, won a World Series with them in 1971. He's with the Mets and the Rangers, and then he finished his playing days with the Cubs, and then he stayed on with them following his release in 1979. He actually stayed in coaching several different stops. Finished his coaching career with the Cubs in 2006, and then he moved on to front office positions with the Dodgers. Saturday, we lost comedic actor Howard Hesseman at age 81, complications following colon surgery. For you Spinal Tap enthusiasts and insiders, I believe they're going to do the service at the Enormo Dome. Little inside joke there. He began his career with an acting group called The Committee. Actually, along with David Ogden Stiers and Charles Winchester on MASH. Anyway, back then, Harold Hesseman went by the name Don Sturdy. He was on episodes of Dragnet, Andy Griffith. Then he sort of became a semi-regular on the Bob Newhart Show, the psychiatrist one, or psychologist one. He was Mr. Plager, remember the gay playwright? And he wrote a play featuring all the people from their psychotherapy group. And then when he first finally came out, they all wanted to leave, and Bob got him to stay and talked him into it. And then he said, well, the character said he started going to his problems. He goes, it was a couple years ago that I met Gerald. And then Elliot Carlin got up and walked out, and then the others eventually. Anyway, he's also one of the members of that Freedom School acting troupe in the original Billy Jack movie. Then he made his biggest move. His role is Dr. Johnny Fever on WKRP in Cincinnati. And then he was later in that show, Head of the Class. Had a lot of other appearances in TV and film as well. So Howard Hesseman gone at 81. Very sad. Now, Sunday we lost Miss USA 2019, Chesley Christ, who took her own life, jumped from a building apparently in New York, I think. After college, she practiced law. And then she did the Miss USA pageant and competed in the Miss Universe. And she was also a correspondent on the tabloid TV show Extra. So that pretty much covers our obituary. Actually, no. One other, it wasn't a death of a person. It was the death of the last remaining shred of dignity of anyone at CNN. Jeffrey Zucker resigned after it became known that he had had a consensual relationship with a staffer. It says, as part of the investigation into Chris Cuomo's tenure at CNN, I was asked about a consensual relationship with my closest colleague, someone I have worked with for more than 20 years. I acknowledged the relationship evolved in recent years, required to disclose it when it began, but I didn't. I was wrong. As a result, I am resigning today. Now, there's other talk, first of all, here's what he says. Because I came to CNN on January 28th, 2013. Together we had 9 great years, 9 great days maybe. I certainly wish my tenure here had ended differently, but it was amazing. It was an amazing run, and I loved every minute. I am grateful to the thousands of incredibly talented CNN and Turner Sports employees who helped make this such a joy for me and such a success for all of us. I wish each of you nothing but the best in the years ahead. It's been noted, all the different scandals at CNN in recent years, not to mention the fact they weren't getting viewers or listeners. Many had said that he would probably be shown the door when the merger between Warner Media and Discovery got finalized later this year. But they say it sent, quote, shockwaves through the industry. Really? Of course, they were nice enough to let us know it was with CNN marketing chief Allison Golist speculated that they've, it's been long speculated that they've had a relationship, but she will remain at CNN. Yeah, she was appointed former Governor Cuomo's communications director in 2012 before joining Zucker at CNN 4 months later. She was once floated as a candidate to replace Zucker. So, yeah, the last remaining shred of dignity at CNN has perished. But as I said, there was no real dignity there to be had, but whatever they had is gone. It has passed away. Well, let's jump right into Polysports with this piece from the Daily Wire about the swimming situation at University of Pennsylvania. Now, depending on where you look, you're hearing, oh, it's all, they're all, you know, pops and rainbows. That's where Will Leah Thomas, it's sort of like William without the M. That's where Will Leah Thomas swam for the men's team a few seasons ago, now swims for the women's team. That includes using the women's locker room. But according to an anonymous teammate, Will Leah Thomas is still sporting some guy junk and has exposed it, maybe just by accident, in the locker room. Oh, and Will Leah has also said he, she, them, they, us, you all is still attracted to women. Yeah, here's a bit more of it. Let me pull this up for you because it's kind of interesting. It really depends on who you talk to. Anyway, seems the if I just get this thing off the stupid screen that's in front of me. But basically, well, I think it's because this is not supposed to be a free article anymore. I think it was free when I was looking at it. Basically, Will Leah Thomas is still attracted to women. And Will Leah Thomas isn't a holy gal, if you get my drift. Sort of like Caitlin, although the word is that Caitlin has had surgery. Brucelin, I mean, I'm sorry. But here's, it says, teammate says, it's definitely awkward because Leah still has male body parts and is still attracted to women. Yeah. The anonymous teammate stated that although male genitalia are often covered by a towel, there have been a number of times Thomas's nudity has been revealed, exposing the genitalia for the women on the team to glimpse and make them feel uncomfortable. Yeah, wouldn't want their feelings to be factoring in here. Told teammates, still dating women. Anonymous teammate said women on the team have articulated their concern with their coach, Mike Schnur, in order to get Thomas barred from the locker room, but to no avail. She said, multiple swimmers have raised it multiple different times, but we were basically told that we could not ostracize Leah by not having her in the locker room and that there's nothing we can do about it, that we basically have to roll over and accept it, or we cannot use our own locker room. It's really upsetting because Leah doesn't seem to care how it makes anyone else feel. The 35 of us are just supposed to accept being uncomfortable in our own space and locker room for, like, the feelings of one. The school was so focused on making sure Leah was okay and doing everything they possibly could do for her that they didn't even think about the rest of us. It just seems like the women who built this program and the people who were here before Leah don't matter. And it's frustrating because Leah doesn't really seem to be bothered by all the attention. Not at all. Actually, she seems to enjoy it. It's affected all of us way more than it's affected her. Well, I'll tell you what, anonymous teammate, don't refer to Will Leah Thomas as her. If your quote-unquote teammate is walking into the locker room and swinging it around, so to speak, don't refer to that person as her, because that's not a her. It's not a she. It's not a he or a they or a they or a them. It's a he. Teammate told the Daily Mail she had discussed with her teammates possibly launching a protest at a swim meet but the consensus was they would be putting themselves at risk. She said, we've all tried to think of anything we could do, but I just don't know what we could do that wouldn't basically have us not be swimming. We already lost a year due to COVID. People don't want to put their own swim careers on hold. Another teammate said, women are basically third-class citizens now. Leah was, the anonymous teammate told the Washington Examiner, Leah was not even close to being competitive as a man in the 50 or the 100. But just because Leah is biologically a man, Leah is just naturally better than most females in the 50 and the 100 or anything else that Leah wasn't good at as a man. On January 8th, Will Leah swim a race in which the time was suspiciously slower than previous times, permitting Isaac Hennig, a Yale swimmer, to win. Isaac Hennig, the Yale swimmer, is a biological female but identifies as a male. And so a teammate, of course, said probably they colluded. And won't reveal their identity because they know that they're toast if they do that. So yeah, that's what's happening at the University of Pennsylvania swim team. This is just gross. So if I seem a bit cranky or I'm being sort of a dick, I mean, this is just nuts. Hope y'all caught that. So going away from politics or sports, and just going straight to the stupidity file, seems AOC, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, for you folks that are not following politics in any way, AOC has a handle on inflation. She knows exactly what causes it. According to an article she did with Yahoo Finance, anyone want in on the great secret? Well, according to AOC, and remember, she knows a lot of stuff. Anyway, the cause of inflation is, and let's get a drum roll, please, corporate price gouging. That's right, folks. The cause of our inflation is corporate price gouging. Folks, you can rest assured that AOC is on the case and will solve this great mystery that is inflation in the USA. So she did about this 2.5-minute interview. I did not record it. I'm going to try and play it and get it through for you on my through my headset here. But it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing to watch and to listen to. I'll give you some of the quotes. Like I said, I'm going to try and play it. Not sure you're going to be able to hear it. And it's taken a while to load because it's an older story. Anyway, make no mistake, it's corporation price gouging, and in her own words, particularly industries with high corporate concentrations, whether it's almost oligopoly-level industries, a lot of these price increases are potentially due to just straight price gouging by corporations. And when she was asked by the interviewer, who, by the way, is either laughing his ass off behind the scenes or more likely doesn't know any more than AOC does when it comes to basic economics, he asked her if she was concerned about inflation, and she offered up this gem. I mean, whenever prices are increasing and it's making it difficult for someone to be able to feed their family, that is always going to be a major point of concern and primary point of concern. But the real key is making sure we're diagnosing the causes correctly. And she basically went on to say that if the cause was too much assistance, it could result in a pullback of assistance. And it would happen right now when people need it the most. Jesus Christ. People, do you know what this idiot even means? I know I don't. But if I had to guess, she's saying that if the cause was too much assistance, we shouldn't withdraw assistance because people need more assistance. What the hell? Seriously, what the hell? Okay, I'm trying to play it out for you folks, but I'm having some issues here, but mainly because I'm not, well, let's just drop AOC. She's going on and on, and she's waving her things. She says, whether it's supply chain corporation complications, or she said, okay, this is it. This is what's disturbing about AOC and her expertise on inflation. She says, but where it's, she says, this is where she finished, as I said. She says, and this should really, really concern you that this person's in Congress. So where did she finish? Well, good old AOC says, if we diagnose it correctly and see the price gouging, we can then pursue antitrust lanes, ever in the hell that means. And then she says, which means labor protections and COVID protections. Seriously, she actually said that. And then she said, and it will help people get back into the workplace and stay safe in the workplace. Now remember, she's talking about the cause of inflation is corporation price gouging. But if we diagnose it correctly, diagnose the cause of inflation correctly, and we find out there was too much assistance, the temptation will be to pull back that assistance. But we shouldn't do that because people need more assistance after, of course, we've given them too much assistance. But then when we know that, we can then, as she puts it, pursue antitrust lanes, which will then mean labor protections and COVID protections. Hawkeye Mike and I had this professor, or assistant professor, I think, in college, in a class. Well, I won't say the class because I don't want to. He was a nice enough guy, the guy was, but he would go off on these tangents sometimes. And I remember Mike one time turning to me saying, does he know what he's saying? This guy was 20 times smarter than AOC. She's just making this up. She's catching tidbits of stuff from different places. So she literally makes up this again. This is the logic: the cause of inflation is corporations price gouging. And then if we find out the cause, we might find out it was too much assistance. But we don't want to pull back assistance because people need that assistance right now, after we've given them too much assistance, of course. But when we find that out, we can then pursue antitrust lanes. And as Indy Hawk points out in the chat room, there was the Amazon tax break that she thought she could spend elsewhere. I mean, this woman is clueless. I mean, does she even know what that... And she, as I said, she mentioned, oh, and it could even lead to supply chain disruptions. She doesn't understand, obviously, the very basic laws of supply and demand. It's not price gouging. It's recouping investment and costs. Do you think gas companies just decided to start upping the gas prices? No, they actually get looked at quite closely on that. I mean, it wouldn't occur to her. Her explanation, I can tell you what her explanation would be for high gas prices, because corporations are trying to price gouge. That would be it. She would stop right there. She would understand none of it. She wouldn't understand the fact that we've literally cut off our own supply, that we've shut down our own distribution channels in order to buy it from places halfway across the world. And her only answer is, well, that's corporations price gouging. Yeah, some of those corporations you're talking about, AOC, are people that support your campaigns and the campaigns of your other squad members. And then when she goes right into pursue antitrust lanes, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Guess what, though? She's totally selfless. You know how AOC and the squad are really pushing forgiveness or elimination, I should say, of, I'm not going to say forgiveness, elimination of student debt? You know, because she's so caring. She's so into the common man. You want to know how come why she's so for it and they're so for it? But first, a little background. So basically, the squad and its affiliate members, for those of you that follow the mafia, the mob would call them associates. There'd be the boss and then the capos and the associates. So for the people that aren't technically in the squad but support them would be associates, affiliates, whatever. They've been calling for cancellation of student debt since they were first elected. But since Dopey Joe started signing executive orders, they've been screaming for it. They've wanted executive orders. They've wanted it put into bills like Build Back Bigger. They've tried to attach it to damn near any bill that comes across Pelosi's desk. Or, as I said, calling for Dopey Joe to sign an executive order. And, of course, it is because they care so much about the common folk. What with, you know, corporations and their price gouging and their antitrust lanes. The irony here is multifaceted. Because these people revere academia when it comes to pushing an agenda or ideology. If people love academia supporting riots or canceling conservative speakers on campuses, they go crazy, absolutely nuts, sorry, Leah Thomas, when academia pulls down statues or when they push nonsensical, radical, quote, unquote, theory. They certainly love academia enough to throw money their way. In the form of loaning students more money and greater amounts of loan money to justify more and greater tuition increases. There is, though, a simpler reason for members of the squad in their relentless pursuit of the cancellation of student debt. What would that reason be? Well, it seems members of the squad happen to owe about $500,000 in student debt. Yeah, so while the squad demonizes quote-unquote corporations and has no problem using manufactured crises like global warming or COVID in order to bully small businesses, they see no problem in pushing for cancellation of student debt, which they themselves owe. Can you say conflict of interest? Rhetorical question, of course. All of us can. But I'm not sure the members of the squad can articulate that phrase, conflict of interest. But they do have no problem ignoring conflict of interest. Now, here's the thing with AOC. She's single. She has no kids. She's paid $174,000 a year. Now, she's mad that student debt's going to start, you know, it's going back into circulation. It's been on hold. But she's, you know, but she makes $174,000 a year. And can vote herself raises, by the way. But she can't seem to pay off student debt. That's absolute madness. Madness. But yeah, so they're calling for. I mean, it's literally the people that can vote themselves pay raises and can vote out their debt. And who don't know the cause of inflation. But want to pursue antitrust lanes because that means more COVID protection and labor protection. I mean, that is so nonsensical and makes only someone watching Yahoo Finance, someone who takes the time to watch video on Yahoo Finance, wouldn't question that. I mean, I don't think that article had comments turned on because sometimes I look. I'm hoping it didn't because the comments page would be 20 times as long as the actual page with the article. So that's the madness that is AOC these last couple days. Okay, The View, Whoopi Goldberg. Yes, Whoopi Goldberg. In a little bit of trouble, right? She was on The View the other day. They were talking about the Holocaust. And, of course, Whoopi said, Holocaust had nothing to do with race. She said, let's be truthful about it, because the Holocaust isn't about race. No, it's not about race. It's about man's inhumanity to man. That's what it's about. Well, she's not wrong on that particular point. That is certainly a part of it. As her co-host tried to get clarification on what she meant, she pointed out that Nazis did in fact believe Aryans were the master race, but she doubled down. She said, there are two groups, two white groups of people. You're missing the point. The minute you turn it into race, it goes down this alley. Let's talk about it for what it is. It's how people treat each other. It's a problem. It doesn't matter if you're black or white, because blacks, whites, Jews, everybody eats each other, whatever that means. The Twitterverse went nuts. Piers Morgan, WTF, this is insane. The extermination of 6 million Jews wasn't about race? And he said, will any rock stars or renegade royals now boycott Whoopi Goldberg and or ABC for this dangerous misinformation? Perez Hilton said, I love Whoopi Goldberg, but this take of hers on the Nazis and the Holocaust is not it. Pointed out her co-hosts on The View were doing everything to guide her out of the hole, but she just dug deeper. So she sort of walked it back. And when I say sort of walked it back, I mean sort of. She said something to the effect of, I'm sorry for the hurt I have caused. That was pretty much it. I'm sorry for the hurt I have caused. So, yeah, great. Nice try. Now, well, she's suspended. The View has suspended Whoopi Goldberg. Now, at some point, I'm not sure how this show is still on. I cannot imagine it is doing ratings-wise such a great viewership. I just can't believe that. But so she's been suspended. I imagine The View can get along just fine without her. I mean, you don't need multiple stupid people to still be stupid. You don't need multiple elitists to still be elitist. So, yeah, she's suspended. You know what? Here's the funny part about it. The one part of it she said, which was, this is about man's inhumanity to man. Had she just said this is certainly part of it, had she just articulated that, but somebody pointed out something on Twitter, and it's brilliant, and I know I shouldn't look to Twitter for my brilliance, but for some quotes and for some insights, you certainly can't beat it on an instantaneous basis. This person said, oh, the irony, and that's not how they said it, says, isn't it kind of amazing how whatever her name is, Johnson, changes her name to Whoopi Goldberg, only to turn around and go all Nazi on us anyway? Yeah, think about that. She changed her name to Whoopi Goldberg. Now, if you ask her now why she did that, I'm sure she'd come up with some nonsensical excuse or reason, but you damn well know why she did it. I don't have to say it. I don't have to speculate. We pretty much know why she did it. But isn't it ironic, then, that someone who calls herself Whoopi Goldberg would say that the Holocaust was not about race? Now, strictly speaking, you could even make the argument, well, yeah, it's, you know, it wasn't their race, it was their religion. But, you know, most people do consider a Jewish race, not just a religion. Certainly a Jewish culture, which was part of what race is. Meanwhile, The View goes on. So here's some news from sort of sports world, sports entertainment world. Ric Flair and Wendy Barlow have announced their split. Now, it turns out they were not legally married. That's not the weird part, at least not to me. The weird part, before Wendy Barlow, by the way, with whom he had an on-screen relationship when he was with WCW in the late 1980s and early 90s, remember she was Fifi the French Maid? And he was sort of a baby face in that point, brief phase as a baby face. He had that flair for the gold segment. He'd been married four times. Now, remember, you remember that he did the Flair for the Gold? There was a segment he did. Remember when Mark Marrow, who at that time was going by Johnny B. Bad, and he was sort of a Little Richard type character, and they'd play this, you know, honky-tonk 50s, 60s rockabilly theme when Johnny B. Bad came out. So he had him on his Flair for the Gold show. And Arn Anderson, who y'all know, Ric Flair's buddy, is sitting there with like a leather jacket and, you know, jeans and white socks with loafers. And Flair had his hair slicked back, and he started like doing this, you know. Anyway, it was kind of painful when you think back, but at the time, fans probably thought it was cool. Anyway, they were together then. They were not together. They just worked together. They've been married four times, or as Diamond Dallas Page would say, four times, four times, four times, four times. I knew he'd been married to Leslie, his first wife, and then to Beth, who was sort of his muse, if you will, during his career heyday. I did not know about the other two. The last one was like 5 years, except, no, that's not even the weird part. Here's the weird part. During the big ceremony in Florida, despite expensive wedding clothes, despite the fact that they live-streamed part of it on Facebook, turns out, as I said, according to both of them, Ric Flair and Wendy Barlow were never actually married. The irony here, of course, is that his book, To Be the Man, went on and on about how loyal and dedicated he was to Beth, how she kept him grounded. Then when that fell apart, he went on and on in his WWE Hall of Fame induction about how he was not a good husband during his limo ride and jet flying days, and how people in the audience shouldn't applaud, quote, that Ric Flair. Well, I really don't want to make too much of this. I like the guy. He's still the best there ever was in the wrestling business, if you want to call it. He could be heel or face, although he obviously did his best work as a heel, and he's best known for that. But he could be a face and still draw huge crowds, mad respect, and do right by the business itself. He abhorred some of the skits and sketches that he had to do, but he did them. He didn't apologize. He had no problem putting over guys, whether it was Sting or Shawn Michaels or Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig or even Bret Hart. Hell, he probably knows better than anyone that putting Hulk Hogan over at Bash of the Beach in Orlando in 1994 was the only way to put Hulk Hogan over with the fans. By the way, I was at that event with a friend of mine. So it was Hogan's first appearance in WCW, and he won the title. But when Hogan went heel with the NWO, he literally only brought eyes to the screen and asses to the seats because he did stuff that was unthinkable, and he couldn't do it. He needed Scott Hall and Kevin Nash to successfully sell it. And when the NWO became like 37 members, yeah, like Spinal Tap, except that was all at the same time, people got tired of it pretty damn quick. Unlike Hogan, who couldn't be credible losing a match when he was a babyface, Flair could do both. Flair could win or lose as both a face or a heel. To a lesser degree, so could Bret Hart, although the Montreal Screwjob might have... Actually, the Montreal Screwjob is what made it... You know, Bret Hart's blowback there is what made it the Montreal Screwjob. When it comes to turns, heel, face, face, heel, actually, Kurt Hennig and Shawn Michaels might have been the best. Flair was good, but Michaels and Hennig were fantastic at it. But if you ask pretty much any pro wrestler, even the ones that make their noise by hating Ric Flair, he is easily the most respected in the business, doles out that respect in kind. And again, he sold better than anybody in the business. His buildups of opponents was second to none. Hell, he walked away from a lot of his matches keeping his belt by disqualifications or interference from his buddies, built up his opponents more. I do wish the guy well. This is really weird. It's kind of bizarre. But I do wish him well. Nobody likes going through the kind of stuff. But by the same token, man, Ric Flair, you're in your 70s now. Just get it together. Get that nice ride into the sunset, please. We do not want to hear Ric Flair going down in a blaze of humiliation, I guess, would be the same. The CEO of a company where I used to buy spices sent an email to customers, or a newsletter email, saying that Republicans are racist. But he's lost a bunch of customers, so now he's begging people to buy gift cards because they've lost supposedly tens of thousands of customers. His name is Bill Penzi. He's the CEO of Penzi Spices. He wrote a letter to his newsletter to customers where he renamed the long holiday weekend, you know, the one that honors Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. He called it Republicans Are Racist Weekend. He actually said that. Said it in a newsletter, and he said that he did it to anger Republicans in honor of the late civil rights leader. So, yeah, I used to buy spices there. No more. The one near us closed or something, but yeah, he said Republicans Are Racist Weekend. That's what he called it. He says, remember how Republicans, going against a mountain of evidence to the contrary, once again lied and said Black Lives Matter wasn't a peaceful movement, but instead terrorists inciting violence throughout the country, and then raced out to buy a crapload of guns because maybe they were finally going to get their chance to shoot a black person? What a bunch of racists, the email said. He also said that the Republican Party, quote, does everything it can to make it harder for black people to vote. He sent out another missive last Friday asking for gift card purchases and admitting that his company has since lost 40,000 subscribers. Then he said, they've gotten some back, but he said, after starting the year with all Republicans are Republicans and following up with Republicans are racists, we've set a nice little boycott Penzi surge in motion, he said. It certainly wasn't unexpected, but if it's within your means, you picking up a small stack of gift cards would help. He said, if you can't even begin to fathom how to, quote, compromise with January 6th or the Republican vaccine lies, needlessly killing 10,000 Americans every week, if you have no desire to become halfway racist, and if their intent to destroy our climate for 1,000 years to come doesn't have you asking, what if we just destroyed it for 500 years instead, we would be better off with you on this Voice of Cooking email list, he wrote. Good God, how does he have any, I mean, I get that there are people that just don't feel affected by that. Here's how, what I say to that. Do not buy spices from Penzi's Spices. Whatever you do, do not buy from Penzi's Spices. Now, you've heard me before. I don't like to call for boycotts, but in this case, I'm sorry, this is unforgivable. But you don't want to know something? I'll bet their social media pages haven't been locked down. I'll bet their Twitter and their YouTube and their Facebook are all the others, whatever they have, I bet they haven't been suspended or terminated their accounts. You know what else? I'll bet their spices have germs, bugs in any spices that you have there. If somebody gave you a gift of Penzi spices, check, there's probably bugs, little cooties. It's probably inferior stuff anyway, probably bogus. So yeah, if you want real authentic spices, go anywhere else but Penzi spices. What a tool. It's official. Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady has retired from the NFL at age 44. Yeah, after 20 seasons with the New England Patriots and two with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tom Brady has hung up the cleats. The Bucs were eliminated in the divisional round this year's NFL playoffs. He won six Super Bowls with the Patriots, a seventh last year with the Buccaneers. He won NFL Offensive Player of the Year twice. He was the MVP three times. He set numerous records for everything from most Super Bowl appearances, most wins by a quarterback, most passing attempts, completions, touchdowns, yards, tie for longest career touchdown pass of 99 yards. Will never be broken, of course, because you can't have a play longer than 99 yards. He was a two-year starter at Michigan, and for the record, for you Hawkeye fans saying we need a fast quarterback, yeah, he ran a 5.2840. At either the combine or his pro day. He took over the Patriots starting job from Drew Bledsoe. Remember, Bledsoe went down with an injury in 2001. And basically, he remained the starter for the rest of his time. He was out at times with injury. He was suspended for a while with that Deflategate. He's going to be a legend forever, despite, you know, Deflategate. He worked hard, and it paid off big time. So good for Tom Brady. I thought I had read that he needed to get to February 4th to get his big, huge bonus, but evidently he's getting it anyway. So good for Tom Brady. Getting like a $10 or $15 million bonus. Nice. Speaking of football, we have our Super Bowl for Sunday, February 13th. The Rams, Los Angeles Rams, will be taking on the Cincinnati Bengals. The Rams got 13 unanswered points in the fourth quarter to beat the 49ers last Sunday. The Bengals got an interception in overtime off of Kansas City Chiefs all-everything quarterback Pat Mahomes early in the OT, by the way. Scored the winning field goal with about 5 minutes into the period. The irony there was, you remember, the Chiefs against the Bills got that. They won the toss in overtime and went right down and got a touchdown, and that ended the game. Bills never got a chance to touch the ball other than to kick it. So here Mahomes gets the, you know, they get the coin toss, and everybody's thinking, here we go again. So it was an OT interception. So, but of course, they had a chance to get the ball. So when Cincinnati scored, it wasn't like Cincinnati just got the ball and scored. Chiefs had the ball. And that's a little more fair. Now, right now, the Rams are a 4.5-point favorite. The over-under is 48.5 points. And according to some, the Bengals have chosen their dark jerseys. But supposedly white jerseys are much higher winning percentage in the Super Bowl. I did not know that. I do not really care about that, as a matter of fact. I'm pretty sure the Bears wore their dark jerseys. The Bears, yeah, probably. Walter Payton didn't get a touchdown, though, so. This Sunday, meanwhile, is the NFL Pro Bowl. Yeah, nobody watches at home. Nobody shows up at the stadium, including most of the players. Of course, it includes no players from either of the Super Bowl teams. I remember when this game used to be the week or two after the Super Bowl. And, yeah, you still had no shows, but at least you had guys from the Super Bowl teams. This year's game's at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. If you feel compelled to watch the Pro Bowl, it airs starting this Sunday at 3 o'clock. I think it's on ESPN or ABC. If it's on ABC, T. Bodie can't watch it because T. Bodie, his cable system doesn't have ABC. Also in the NFL, the Washington Redskins are hereby known as the Washington Commanders. Also in New York City, New York Jets offensive lineman Cameron Clark is retiring after having played a snap. He was injured in training camp this past season. At the time, the team called it a spinal contusion. He consulted with doctors, evidently. They say the risk of paralysis is too great. Man, I wish the guy well. It's terrible to lose a playing career this way. It really is. But I'll say this, though. It's infinitely better than losing it because he can't walk or move or function after a football injury on the field. So at least he's walking away while he can walk away. He has a new coach, men's basketball coach, after parting ways mutually, wink, wink, with Coach Chris Mack last week. Interim coach is Mike Pegues. He will get $340,000 plus incentives for the remainder of this season. Meanwhile, UConn has paid the $11.1 million due to former coach Kevin Ollie. That was determined by an arbitrator as part of his wrongful termination suit against the university. Nice. Nice. The Wooden Award watch list, which sort of is for the NCAA's best basketball player, it's been narrowed from 25 down to 20 people, includes 7 Big Ten players. They are Iowa forward Keegan Murray, Illinois center Kofi Coburn, Purdue guard Jaden Ivey, and Purdue center Zach Edey. Indiana forward Trace Jackson Davis, Ohio State forward E.J. Liddell, and Wisconsin guard Johnny Davis. Yeah, the conference also has 5 teams in the AP top 25 poll. Auburn's still number one. Gonzaga is still number one in the coaches poll. Speaking of the Hawkeyes, not a great week. Dropped a home game to Purdue last Thursday, number 4 Purdue, then lost a road game to Penn State this past Monday. Fell in double overtime and stupidly fell. I mean, a stupid loss. Hawkeye wrestling team also lost. They lost to number 1 ranked Penn State last Friday. Men's basketball team still on the road. We go to OSU tomorrow night, and then back to Iowa City to host Minnesota on Sunday. Okay, although there is already competition at the 2022 Beijing Olympics, they officially start Friday with the opening ceremonies. The U.S. currently sits at 1-0 in curling. Yeah, curling has already started. Tomorrow we have some freestyle skiing, some hockey, and then more curling. U.S. is going to be missing some skiers on both the men's and women's team. COVID protocols have some in quarantine. And, of course, folks are worried about the app that the host, Red China, is requiring attendees to install on their phones. COVID upon arriving in Red China, a Swedish men's skier, he tested positive in his home country over a month ago, had no contact with the team, quarantined. He's drawn six negative PCR tests, and he tests positive again when he gets to Red China. Now, this is what I'm thinking. I think it's going to be interesting spotting any trends. How much is Red China controlling these tests? Are we going to see a high occurrence of you know, high-profile athletes testing positive? Speaking of the Olympics, some sad news in the world of track and field. Texas A&M volunteer coach named Dion Lendor. He was a former sprinter for Tobago and Trinidad and Tobago. He was killed in a car accident a couple weeks ago. He ran in three Olympics for Trinidad and Tobago, including he was the anchor on their bronze medal 4x400 team at the 2012 London Olympics. The Milrose Games, Ella Purier St. Pierre defended her Wanamaker mile title from 2020. The event was canceled last year. She ran 4:19.3. And then on the men's side, Australian Ali Hawari won with an Australian national record of 3:50.83. Pretty solid times coming off the Beijing Olympics or the Tokyo Olympics. They usually say that the year post Olympic year is really pretty weak track and field wise, but sounds like not right now. So we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk some COVID. It's going to have Hawkeye Mike's going to be on because he sent me a thing about a study recently released by Johns Hopkins. So pretty cool. We're going to go through this and sort of talk about it. And of course, he also talked about, Mike just reminded me of, there's a rumor that Jim Harbaugh, the coach of Michigan, is going to the Vikings. Now, people are thinking, why? After, you know, after a great year, winning the Big Ten, you know, getting to the CFP playoff, but yet, you know, they're saying he might be heading to the NFL with the Minnesota Vikings. You know, there's no telling what is motivating him in this case. Now, some are saying, well, he sees the writing on the wall, no competing with the SEC. Or maybe he just feels maybe even competing still against Ohio State. You know, it took everything for them to win that matchup this year. There's something else. I haven't really talked about it, but Michigan loses a lot this year. Do not have much coming back from a starting perspective. So that's part of it. The other part of it is, and you know, the NFL is probably going to throw money at him if he flames out. You know what? Big deal. That's probably what he's thinking. And you know what? He can retire. I mean, he can probably retire now. So that would be my guess. I don't know. Depending on where you look, you know, most people are saying, I mean, not that long ago, people were saying the Raiders or the Dolphins or wherever. So I don't know what to think. The longer we go without an announcement, the more curious it gets. But it also just could just mean that's how long it's taken to get these negotiations done. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back. We'll talk some COVID and Mike and I will talk about some of the latest goings on in the COVID world. Be back in a little over 3 minutes. Grab yourself a refreshment.
Everybody's
And we are back after a little daz from the group Brick from 1976, I think. And I'm sending a little, I referenced David Ogden Stiers earlier when talking about the death of Howard Hesseman, and David Ogden Stiers himself passed away several years ago. But somebody pointed out on Twitter, a guy who calls himself Captain Kirk, and no, I don't believe it's Kirk Ferentz, but he is equally likable. He pointed out, he said, that's Charles Emerson Winchester, sir. And I said, absolutely. And as Colonel Potter would say, or he said, Charles Emerson Winchester III, correct. He said, as Colonel Potter would say, give that man a cheroot. Remember that? Give that man a cheroot. Anyway, so we are back. This is Hank Jones, Poly Sports, every Wednesday, 5:30. The number to call is 319-527-6706. Hawkeye Mike is on now with his hand up. We are going to talk some COVID. What prompted this? You know, we keep saying we don't want to talk about COVID anymore, but a study came out, and Mike's going to tell us about that real quick. Mike, how you doing, sir? Oh, Mike, you there?
Pretty good, Hank. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah,
so
I'm there.
Quick, talk about this study. Tell us who did it, et cetera, and when, what they found.
The study out of Johns Hopkins. So, and it's pretty exhaustive. I looked at a little bit into the actual report, 62 pages. For our purposes, we don't really want to go. Most of it's just statistical analysis that I think most people probably would kind of glaze over trying to figure it out. But the bottom line is that it was exhaustively researched, and although not peer review hasn't been completed, it looks pretty definitive. And the bottom line is the conclusion that all the lockdowns that began 2 years ago had little or no effect on the mortality rates that occurred as a result of the pandemic. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty stunning finding, to tell you the truth.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about this. Governor Youngkin, the new governor in Virginia, he's banned the school mask mandates, and yet several groups, including teachers unions, of course, are filing suit to keep them in place. Governor Gruesome Newsom has these mandates in place, and yet he's out and about without a mask again, so the hypocrisy goes on there. You know, it's mind-boggling to think that, if you had to guess, do you think this was – I mean, I'm sure I'm oversimplifying it. Yes, it was a matter of being politicized, but did they say – I mean, does the study say at all – that this was expected? I don't know. I shouldn't say it like that because then it makes it sound like they were predetermining the study. Does it say, were they shocked by the findings? I mean, was there a hypothesis that they put in place and then compared it or not?
Well, the study itself doesn't say that, but I think that what is interesting in it is that basically it has a pretty definitive conclusion that this whole thing with the lockdowns was counterproductive, and that the damage to the economy and the stuff that flowed from that, you know, the livelihoods lost and the lives that lost from that, the social cost, the depression, all that, you know, really outweighed what happened, you know, what any benefit that could have come from the lockdowns, which were virtually minimal in terms of saving lives. And the lesson that should be learned is that these kinds of tools to be used in a pandemic or never be repeated.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the one thing you said, this can never happen again. And that was perfect. Look, I mean, like I said, some states and schools are still doing these things, not necessarily lockdowns, but mandating masks or even probably still some distance learning. Sports leagues are finally relaxing or eliminating some of their protocols and their quarantines and stuff like that. But look, I mean, look at the seasons that were lost, you know. I mean, it's just
well, and by the way, touching on the schools, too, we had 2 years now in many places of either basically nothing was going on or we're still seeing virtual learning. I think that the effects on that on kids, little young kids, could be incalculable. We won't really know it for a while. But,
yeah.
How's that going to be rectified? 2 years, two lost years, basically. And they still are trying to go back, you know, Omicron and gave an excuse to the teachers unions I'm talking about when I say they, to
yeah.
go back to, oh, you know, we need to go back to virtual learning. The teachers unions have been the main culprit in this, We have to understand that, and by extension, then they're Democratic flunkies that they're basically attached at the hip with, and to the detriment, and it's their interest, not the interest of the children that have been given precedence. And I think that this is something. Now, in the red states, this stuff hasn't really been happening, or at least it didn't after a couple months.
Right.
But which, by the way, they've taken a lot of heat for. But in the blue states, I mean, these mask mandates, like you expect a six-year-old or something to wear like, now they're making them wear like K95 or these HN95 masks, which are a lot more difficult. To wear that for 8 hours, it's just, I think it's child abuse. And there is no scientific basis for this. And also I would point out that in a lot of these school districts, they're requiring them to wear it while they're outdoors, which there is no scientific basis for this. I mean, I don't even think Fauci would enforce that. But
no.
So I don't know where this stuff comes from, and I don't blame parents for just being, you know, beyond themselves mad about what's going on.
No.
It's what led to the election of Duncan. And, of course, now we know several of these school districts in Virginia are defying his order, which basically says, we're not saying you can't wear a mask. We're saying we're going to make it optional. We're going to leave it up to the parents, and there's not going to be any more mandates. And they're now going to the extreme conduct of actually expelling students, suspending them anyway, who refuse to wear masks despite the governor's orders.
The governor
needs to do something about this.
And I think he's trying. I think they're intentionally fighting it back. You know, the saddest thing I saw for school-age kids was the first day of school in 2021. So, you know, we went through the spring with COVID and the summer. So 2021, I'm coming home from work. I see some kids sitting outside a couple houses down from us. And they're sitting in a circle, and they're outside, and all it was like four kids, and they're all wearing masks. I remember just thinking at the time, this is a year and a half ago. I remember thinking a year and a half ago, thinking, this is absurd. What are we doing to these kids? And now we know, being outdoors especially, and we know that kids don't need it. The kids don't the effect on kids is minimal. But as Indy Hawk has pointed out in the chat room, we're making kids wear these masks. They don't need the jab. And, you know, you can sit there and talk about adults being willing to be vaccinated or not. Like you, I am vaccinated. That was my choice, was not anyone else's. But for kids,
exactly.
I mean, you would think we would need to make sure that we can, you know. And gosh, they've been saying for a year and a half that, look, we need to protect the vulnerable, the elderly, the, you know, the immune compromised. We already knew that a year and a half ago, and yet we're still treating it like it's just, I mean, look at the business. You mentioned businesses. Who thrived? You know, well, Amazon. Why? Because shopping from home.
Big businesses did.
Yeah, and guess what? Amazon also carries a ton of web traffic, Amazon Web Services. So, yeah, distance learning, distance working, Amazon certainly didn't mind that. And guess what else you're doing? You're shopping all day. And you're sitting around on Bill Gates' Internet Explorer or Google's Chrome, and you're buying from Dell or whatever. I mean, look at who thrived and who didn't. Now, how many businesses will we know have closed? You know, how many are we even going to know at any point? How many businesses closed as a result of COVID? You know, you mentioned the trillions we spent on paycheck protection loans.
Right. And, you know, the ones that got hit the hardest, of course, are the mom-and-pop shops, the small businesses.
Yeah.
They're the ones that really suffered. The people that the Democrats supposedly look out for, right, the little guy. And PPP could only do so much, you know. I mean, I think it helped to some extent, but then it became, remember, it became very bureaucratic. It was hard to get the loans for a lot of people, and it just wasn't enough, you know, for a lot of individual businesses. It may have saved some businesses. I don't want to minimize it, but we lost a lot of businesses that are just never going to come back.
Yeah. I mean,
the Boston
market near our house, we drive by and half the time it's closed. Well, why do you think? I mean, they can't get workers. Part of it, they can't get product to sell. I mean, it's just, You know, well, if it's happening to the Boston markets who have buying power, what's it doing to you know, Mike and Hank's corner coffee shop? It's absolutely crushing them. So
a lot of them are gone forever.
Yep.
Yep.
And lost jobs. I mean, you know, you heard me talking about AOC earlier with her, what's causing inflation. And I mean, it's just, that's our leadership right now. That's who's working to get, quote unquote, get us out of this mess. There's no hope if that's the case. I mean, if we're going to keep going with that one, I mean, it's just PPP. Here's an example. PPP, you had two ways to do it. You could, when you went for forgiveness, you could do it over 8 weeks or you could do it over 24 weeks. Well, theoretically, it was for businesses that were closed to, you know, initially. It was for businesses that had to close so that they could pay their employees. Remember what happened in Washington State. You had a lady, a woman, who ran not a massage, but yeah, like a therapeutic massage. She actually had employees make complaints to their labor department because they lost their extended unemployment benefits. You know, I mean, how do you even rationalize that? You know,
was it for the first year or so, at least, or maybe into the first part of last year, you had this situation where you were better off. A lot of people that were working in, you know, especially for minimum wage, where you're better off on the dole than you were working. I mean, that is insane to have that kind of a disincentive to work, and yet we did it for a year and a half. And maybe there was an imperative for it for 6 months or something like that. But by the end of 2020, it was, you know, the cost of it and the effects of it, which you could see, which was where you had all these, you know, when businesses were trying to come back, they couldn't hire anybody because it behooved them to stay on the dole. And, you know, what was it? They were, for a long time, they were getting like a $600,
Or 600 a week. And the other thing with that is if you had a job and you had the ability to go back and you chose not to, you lost that. So people, that's why people were complaining. They were like, oh, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. What are you talking? I mean, they didn't even tie it to
a program, you know, only a lefty could love. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if you went down and applied for unemployment tomorrow, they would check what have your earnings been. If you've been making $1,000 a month, they're not going to give you $2,000 a month. No rational, sane unemployment compensation fund is going to do that. But yet we did it. We literally said that. But then we were sitting there saying, well, see, these businesses, we got to make sure they're doing it right. Well, God, you know, if you could do it over 8 weeks. Okay, if you could get back in business, if you could do it over, you could in the second phase, you could quote unquote amortize it over 24 weeks. But again, if you're closed longer than that, it doesn't really matter. But the loans themselves were for roughly 2.5 months of payroll. So even then, if you were out for 6 months, you only were able to keep your employees around theoretically for 2.5 months. And the initial thing was for businesses that are closed down. Well, guess what? The ones that remained opened, those are the ones that had the problems. You know, I mean, it's just, but it's unbelievable the way they did. How far behind are students, you know, at this point?
We're looking at 2 years, right? But it's not really that simple, you know, to say, oh, well, you know, maybe we're, because let's face it, right? You're talking about a 7 or 8 year old who's only being instructed virtually. They're learning nothing. I guarantee you they don't have the attention span, or a lot of them don't even have the computers, especially the poorer kids, where they could do that. But even if they did, at that age, you have the socialization factor and just the hands-on learning factor that they haven't been getting in 2 years, and a lot of them haven't been getting anything at all. So I mean, I don't know that we're going to be able. This is something that's going to the effects of this are going to probably last for years, and a lot of these, you know, I mean, they may never get the kind of education that they need, you know, get it back. And every time we have another variant come out, are they going to shut down again? That's another thing, you know. They never did this in Europe, which you think would be the control freak place. the masking and it's just not something that's been done in most European countries. And I would also point out that about 2 weeks ago, Great Britain announced that they were getting rid of all their
Denmark just did
it the other day. Yeah, right. And well, there were some that never did. Like I think some of the Scandinavian countries, like Norway and Sweden, they never really did it, and they never had a higher incidence that I'm aware of, percentage-wise, of COVID than we had in these places where we locked down. And by the way, I don't think that overall there's been a higher incidence of COVID in a lot of the red states, like where you're at, Hank, Texas, mm-hmm. other states, my own home state of Iowa. They don't have higher incidences of COVID or hospitalizations or deaths than these blue states where they've maintained these draconian lockdowns and mandates.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I think we have pretty clear evidence now that these mandates and these lockdowns have not made a significant difference. This Johns Hopkins study is a key in pointing that out, and the downside of it has been far worse.
Oh, definitely. I mean, mental health.
It's just been a botched. Well, you know. To be fair, when we started things out 2 years ago, I mean, we didn't really know. First of all, there was never no one in there, I think, imagined it was going to go on for 2 years off and on. But you remember it was like, what, 2 weeks to flatten the curve,
yeah, 2 weeks
right?
to flatten
and,
the curve.
And
yeah.
So I don't know what happened with that. But then the control freaks took over, I think, in the government. And, you know, Trump, I think, tried to humor him for a while. I think it went against a lot of his instincts. And I think if he had been reelected, I think we would have, there would have been a cleaning of house at the CDC and at the FDA, and Fauci would be long gone. And we'd have a much different policy now. But a lot of these, to be fair, a lot of these lockdowns and mandates are being perpetuated by state governments and local governments in blue states.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And I happen to live in one. And you know, like we're at the county I live in, which is in suburban Denver, we have mask mandates. Now, it looks like they're finally going to lift them. But they were lifted, remember, when the CDC came out and everything was honky-dory in May, and then the Delta variant came around in August, and everything went back. And then the Omicron, and they went back to mask mandates here. And it's just, you know, are we going to yo-yo every time you get a little rise in things or every time a new variant comes out? You just can't live that way. I mean, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, President Trump did say at the time, he did the 2 weeks, and then he said, it looks like we're going to have to go another 2 weeks or 30 days, whatever he said. And so, you know, that was, but it was understandable. We didn't have a handle on it, et cetera. We didn't know enough about it.
Right.
Now,
we talk about
all these laws that have to come in, like, oh, we got to have laws that you can never have mask. Laws have to be aimed as much at who is controlling this stuff. I mean, you know, so much of this was done without Congress, and I'm not sure that Congress would have been any help. But I mean, so much of it was done by edict out of people that, you know, like Fauci. I mean, I was talking to a guy a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned, you know, Fauci has been all over the place on this, you know, from we don't need to alter our behavior. And he says, well, he did that because Trump told him to say that. Really? So wait a second. He listened to Trump, but now he doesn't listen to Biden? Is that the key? I mean, because I can't imagine. I mean, either that or he's telling Biden what to say. I mean, either way, this, you know, it just doesn't wash. I mean –
Well, Fauci listens only to Fauci because Fauci knows best. Because remember, Fauci is science.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, I don't understand how he's. Yeah, I cannot believe that we have let him stay around as long as he has. I mean, you know, you talk about the truckers in Canada that are doing these convoys. It's kind of hard to believe that there hasn't been a mass march over to Fauci's house or his office or whatever.
Well, you know what? I have a theory on that, and I think I know why this hasn't happened. And that's because in half the country, the red country, they haven't gone this route. They've, you know, locally they've gotten rid of stuff. I don't know for sure in Florida, but I get the impression. But I do know that when I was back in Iowa last summer, and I've got a sister that lives down in Texas. It's, you wouldn't know that there are restrictions. You know, people aren't wearing masks. You can, you know, congregate, do what you want. And that's just the way it's been. And so I think because it hasn't been uniform across the country, these lockdowns. And in the blue states, you just got a bunch of people that are sheep, I think, to a large extent. And they go along with what their elected officials want to do, and they're all left-wing Democrats. But in the red states, they've been basically free. So there hasn't been this sort of right. I think that's, you know, managed to keep the rising, you know, dissent that might have happened, because a lot of these states where there would have been a rising of dissent, they didn't have to because they didn't go down that route, or they ended it pretty quickly after a couple months, and they haven't gone back. And like I said, in those states, you don't see a higher incidences of COVID and deaths and you know, it fluctuates in all states, but on average, you haven't seen a higher incidence in those states that you as compared to like New York and California or Illinois.
No, and worse than that, some of those people, I mean, you've heard about people from New York, for instance, that knowingly, one guy, for instance, that was sort of a poster child of it, who was that playwright or whatever, or producer, who knowingly had COVID in New York, got on a plane, flew to Florida, hung out in his condo area in the common areas, you know, the pool and all that, and then ended up dying anyway. But, I mean, that guy knew he had it, and that guy knowingly did that, you know, traveled on a plane, all that stuff. I mean, that's just, you know, that's someone from New York, you know, and here we're making it sound like, well, DeSantis is crazy. Well, yeah, he can't control somebody doing that, you know, and yet somehow DeSantis is the crazy one. I mean, that's what I mean. I don't understand that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well,
I have a friend. I sat on a board that he ran.
It's politics.
Yeah, but I sat on the board of a nonprofit in the area, and the guy that runs it, he's still in government. He no longer runs a nonprofit, but he's still in government. But he actually said, he made one of those comments of, you know, we're just going to have to go with the sensible way, which is when somebody goes in who's unvaccinated, they go to the end of the line, or we just don't treat them. I mean, that's their answer, is if you don't get vaccinated, we don't treat you. Well, some of the problems are the vaccinations themselves. There are people that have had reactions to it. And,
well, you know,
you know,
here's the problem, too, is we hear how vital it is to get these vaccinations. And if that's the case, because, it's, you know, it'll keep you, you know, from, or even if you get it, it'll keep you from getting very sick. So if we have all this confidence in the vaccine, why do we care whether other people get vaccinated or not?
Exactly. Well, as T. Bodie pointed out,
what difference does it make? It's on them.
As T. Bodie pointed out, vax people outnumber unvaxxed in Israel and British hospitals. 90% vaccination rate in Israel, and yet vaccinated people outnumber the unvaccinated in their hospitals. So something is off there, you know. I mean, was it?
Well, right. But I mean, if we have all this faith in the vaccination,
then
we really believe that, then why do we care whether someone else is vaccinated or not? You're protected
exactly.
If you're vaccinated, right?
Now,
if you don't believe that, or if you don't really believe that, then that would explain why. But then it comes right back in circle again. Well, then if they don't work, then why are we doing the mandate? And I'm not saying they don't work. I do believe in them, and I do think that they prevent serious illness to a much greater degree than if you're completely unvaccinated. But, you know, we have a free country, right, and we don't force people to take medications they don't want to take or inject themselves with things. At least that's what I always thought. But
yeah.
I think, you know, after a couple months of this, my view was always – look, we start to know who the vulnerable are, and the people who are vulnerable need to take extra precautions. This is before the vaccine. Need to take extra precautions. Maybe they do need to self-isolate and take other precautions. But the rest of us as a society, and to have a vital economy and to have a functioning society, we have to move on with our lives. And, of course, a lot of states did. But a lot of states didn't. And 2 years later, we're still not seeing that. We're still seeing these mandates. And this is in the face of now a year of having vaccines widely available.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't, I guess I've, I wish, what I really wish I could understand was the vaccine just rush out too fast? Was it, or was it just not effective enough to begin with? Or did they, you know, and then if it comes to that, did they know, did the people in charge, so to speak, know it? I mean, I don't think we're ever going to get a definitive cause. You know, I don't think we're ever going to be told anyway, not in our lifetime, that it was a lab experiment in China gone bad. I just don't think they're going to, in our lifetime, we're not going
to
hear that.
To,
I think you got a better shot at knowing
right,
who killed JFK.
Right, but yeah, you have to remember, two vaccines are not, you know, they're not the be-all and end-all. They are never, any vaccine is not a guarantee that you're not going to get sick. It's just a tool that is helpful in preventing it, hopefully, or at least lessening the severity. But there's no vaccines that are 100%. They never have been. And
right.
So that's what we're finding out here. It's just that in the hysteria of the last 2 years with COVID, these things were put forward as a panacea that they're not, and they never were. And I do think, as a point of optimism, I do think now, even in a lot of the blue states, and even among some sane liberals, they're starting to come to the conclusion that we do have to move on, and that you're going to have to learn to live with it, and there's no way you're going to get rid of it. And you cannot just, you know, live your life, you know, enslaved by COVID. And if they don't, and I think a lot of them are going to find out in November, because we saw what happened last November in Virginia, that there's going to be a price that some of these people are going to pay at the polls, because people are done with it, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's why I think that swerve, you know, the swerve from fighting to get bilk back bigger, and then they suddenly swerved it to election. I think what you said is an indicator
of
that.
Exactly.
That was a very good indicator of why they did it. I think they just, you know, look, the election hoax may have been the biggest, you know, the worst part of all of it, because of what it brought and what the incompetence. You know, our friend Brian, who talked about malevolent incompetence, well, man, he didn't know what a malevolent incompetence was until November, you know, 4th or whatever of 2020, because since then we have never, you know, we haven't seen that kind of level. I mean, the fraud. And again, I get back to, they say, well, it wasn't enough fraud to make a difference. How do you know that? Fraud has to be investigated, because you don't, to just simply say, well, there were 10 votes that we saw. Well, no, that's 10 votes you looked for, that you saw in the stuff you were looking for. But fraud, there's no levels of fraud. It's either fraud or it's not. And if there's fraud, then it must be investigated. But they fought tooth and nail not
well,
to have that. You know, I mean, I think that's
my
one.
Take on this. And my take on that a little bit, and I read an article on this just recently that I thought was a really good point. And it's sort of, I was not good enough at enunciating myself, but it's sort of a feeling I always had in the back of my head. Was it's not what happened here, and this is just as serious when I get this out. It's not so much fraud in terms of, you know, ballot box stuffing and things like that. But what happened is, if you'll recall, in the run-up to the 2020 election, was in a lot of these swing, put in the Democrats were able to force in these rules that basically stacked the deck, so that the election in a lot of these states was basically tilted toward the Democrats. And they got the results, you know, winning very narrowly in some of these states. And what we have to do is make sure that those kinds of things, those kinds of stacking of the deck rules that occurred, don't happen again. That's what really tipped it. That's what really tipped it. And I think, you know, it's so in a way it was more devious, it was more calculated. And then just, you know, a bunch of people like, you know, like we think of in Chicago, you know, in 1960 stuff in ballot boxes, or a bunch of dead people voting. There was some of that, but the primary problem was, and I can get, I don't want to get in the weeds, but you remember they started doing these mass mail-in ballots, and they were targeted toward Democratic areas, and funds, you know, they came in, Zuckerberg, and a lot of them, they targeted, and they used local officials to stack the deck so that the elections that were conducted were tilted in favor of the Democrats.
Yeah, from the very beginning.
And it basically, in a lot of these states where they won narrowly, we're talking, I can't remember the article now off the top of my head, but there was when you say, it was not so much that there was massive fraud, I mean, I guess you could call this a form of fraud, as much as it was a stacking of, if you change the rules of a game to favor one side, it's a real surprise, right, if they win.
Yeah.
That's what happened here. That's what happened.
It wasn't just stuffing ballot boxes. It was mailing ballots in key areas and not in others. It was changing rules.
Exactly. You know,
it was changing rules without doing it properly.
That favored Democrats. Yeah, exactly. And that's what we gotta, and that's what the Democrats now, they want that bill that thankfully went down. They wanted to kind of institutionalize and federalize that kind of thing on a nationwide basis. Because they know they're going to lose their ass if they don't, and thank God it didn't happen. Because a lot of the states, like Wisconsin, for instance, and then Pennsylvania, they're not going to let this happen again. And remember, they used COVID as the excuse, of course. But
they can't anymore.
A lot of these states, they're not going to be able to do that. And that's why it was so important to the Democrats in the Congress to pass a federal law to try to do this. And
if you remember what Dopey Joe said, though, you remember Dopey Joe said when he was explaining it at a rally or wherever he was for 83 people in Georgia, I think it was. He came out and said it. He didn't mean to say it, but he came out and said it. He says, "This isn't about who votes. This is about who counts the votes." He literally said that. Now I'm sure that
that's right out of Gangs of New York. Remember
yeah.
when there's a scene in there where the mayor goes, it's not the voters who decide, it's the counters who decide.
Yeah, but see, I don't think Dopey Joe was supposed to say that.
Right? Tammany Hall.
Yeah, I think he went off script. I don't think he was supposed. I mean, I will not be surprised if come January 21st, 2023, he is out. I will not be. I think. The people behind him want him. You know, he's got to last that long because if something happens now, and either
do they want Kamala Harris?
Well, no, but I'm saying whether it's her or whether they were to install Michelle Obama or whatever, anybody that takes the office of president before January 20th of 2023 will only be able to run for election once after that. They won't be able to run in 2028. They can run in 2024, and that's it. But after 2023, they can run in 2024 and they can run in 2028. So that's what Barack is thinking. You know, he's not thinking about. I mean, he's not an idiot in that regard. I mean, he understands that. You know, whether it's Michelle or Kamala Harris or whoever, they understand that somebody who takes office now,
Hillary,
somebody who takes office now can only run for reelection once. You know, and I.
Well, it would be Hillary 4.0, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Remember about the new Nixon? Well, you got the new Hillary, right?
Yeah,
so,
the newer Hillary.
Anyway,
and speaking of which, by the way, you know, it was up until Election Day of 2020 that they were still calling her the president, that she was the rightful winner. You know, there was a healthy segment of the left that was saying that she never lost. You know, so I mean, it's amazing how it turned. You know, I just, and
if I recall also the thing that, you know, that was sparking the insurrection that they're trying to prevent now is people objecting to the seating of electoral electors in states, you know, where they think there's something going on. Well, if I recall, both in 2000, in the year 2000 when Bush won and in 2016 when Trump won, there were objections raised by Democrats to try to stop electoral votes from being cast for those candidates.
Yep.
So that was okay then.
Yeah, it was just fine then. Yeah, no, I think it's
an insurrection if Republicans try to do it.
Well, so you know, here's another thing. The mail-in ballots and the mail-out ballots, who does those? The Postal Service. Who does the Postal Service union support 99.9% of the time? Democrats. You know, I mean – they expect us to not sit around and think about those things. But, I mean, and frankly, the U.S. Postal Service, you could call it, is quasi-owned by Amazon anyway. I mean, the U.S. Postal Service is literally delivering on Sundays again just for Amazon packages. You know, they wouldn't, I mean, And yet we're supposed to believe that none of this is.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with that, though, is that trying to prove fraud after the fact is almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about, like, that's why it's the rules that are put in place and the stacking of the deck beforehand that has to stop. Because if you can stop that, then you can stop these kinds of things that are almost impossible to prove empirically in a large way afterwards. Even in the states where they were trying to go back and do audits, you know, in a lot of those states, they either haven't been able to do it or they weren't able to do it in a very effective way because at every turn they're facing opposition from the Democrats.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you think back to this. You think about this. I mean, the election frauds, obviously. We had whole sports seasons canceled. Now, I know they've given people extra years, but, I mean, you had hockey and basketball and, all the spring sports that year that got canceled. You had leagues that went out of business virtually. I mean, the XFL, will they ever come back? I don't know. I assume the Arena Football League is not – you know, doing great guns. The CFL lost a season. I don't know how they did this past season, but I mean, you know, are they going to come back from, I mean, what did the Iowa athletic department had to get loans of like $75 million or whatever, you know, I mean, we're not even, it's not just about, you know, all just small business. I mean, it's institutional stuff like college sports that were affected. So anyway, hey, are you a Spotify user?
Well, you know, no, I'm not, actually. I'm not a sophisticated, you know, the using Spotify. I'm not even on Twitter or Instagram or anything like that. But I do know about, you know, the big hullabaloo with Joe Rogan, and who, by the way, is still conservative as far as But he does have a kind of a libertarian streak, and he does have a desire to get things out and be a little controversial. And I don't understand the way a lot of people on the left have gone insane over this guy, simply because he had an expert on that wanted to talk about the effectiveness of the vaccines or something like that.
Yeah, Neil Young said either he can stay on Spotify or Ives can stay on Spotify. Well, Neil Young gets 200 or 2 million hits a month, supposedly. Rogan gets, you know, 5 million a day. Literally. I mean, Rogan gets over 100 million hits a month. Yeah. So I think,
and I wonder,
you know,
how many people are hitting on Joni Mitchell.
Well, exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Joni Mitchell's music. I like some of Neil Young's music. Although,
right. But I mean, the influence she has on Spotify, I don't think compares
to
Rogan.
Well, like somebody, like the meme says, Neil Young, I'm leaving Spotify so that you can pay to hear me sing Keep on Rocking in the Free World. It's just, some of these memes are
yeah,
quite,
you know,
clever,
I mean,
no,
I'm a Neil Young fan too. I mean, I think the guy's a great musician. It's
yeah.
Where is this thing, like, if you don't do what I want to do or think the way I think or believe what I believe, you know, you're not just wrong. You have to be silenced. You have to be, exterminated, you know, in terms of having an outlet.
I think it's Barbara Streisand syndrome. If you'll remember, in 2001, after 9/11, everybody suddenly thought George Bush was doing a great job, you know, that he was rallying and all that. Hell, Ed Koch even ended up voting for him. And when he was up until the point he died, Ed Koch said, I'm not voting for, don't come to me about voting for this person. I'm voting for George Bush. And he died right before Obama became president. But, you know, he said all along, no. And Rosie O'Donnell for a while, remember, was a Bush fan on her show. But then that letter from Barbara Streisand to the Democrat, I don't know if it was the Congressional Committee or the National Committee, but she wrote that letter saying, why are we doing this crazy thing of supporting a man that we didn't even want to win? And she one of the things she says is, it's not that we can't care about what the people think because the people don't know what's good for them. She literally said that in a letter. Well, guess what? She's smart enough to keep her mouth shut now, but that's what it is. It's that syndrome of, you know, I can't believe people don't think like I do. And to the point, though, that it becomes – it's irrationality. There's nothing rational about saying, you know, Joe Rogan goes or I go, and by God, the people better listen to me. You know, I mean, there's nothing
rational
about that.
Well, it's the ultimate cancel culture. And this cancel culture, when it's institutionalized, becomes something that, you know, these people like to use, but which actually applies better to them. They're the true fascists.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of is, why didn't Neil Young call up Joe Rogan and ask to talk to him about it, and maybe even ask to, but you know why? Because he doesn't really have an answer for it. You know, that's
right,
the thing. He doesn't really have an answer for why
debate.
We should.
He doesn't want a debate.
Yeah, he doesn't have an answer as to why we should have draconian lockdowns, shouldn't have draconian lockdowns, mandates, et cetera. That's why. That's why, because he didn't really have an answer for that. And that's, I think, is a big part of it. Is that they don't really have the answer. They don't have the rational argument against it. You know, I mean, how hard is it to I mean, and then this is it. How hard is it to understand that we can't shut down our economy for 2 years, either in whole or in part? How hard is it to understand that as things become unavailable, inflation happens? How hard is it to understand that if you throw a ton of money into an economy where there aren't enough goods to buy, that you have, you know, you have worthless money, which leads to inflation? I mean, how hard is it to understand? You know what? They don't want to understand that. And that's where the irrationality enters in, is that they suddenly realize, you know, they're fighting for something. They're willing to die on a hill that they don't even know, you know, the layout of the hill, you know? I mean, they're fighting for a hill on which they know nothing about the topography of it.
You know, I mean, I think a little bit we've just gotten away from the what happened to the whole idea of free speech and the marketplace of ideas, and that ideas compete and the cream rises and the other stuff, you know, falls based on merit. And as I think it was Justice Holmes famously said, the way that you combat bad speech is with good speech or more speech. You know, you don't squelch it. And we've gotten away from this. And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, now we've got this cancel culture, this thing going on that just seems to run rampant. But, you know, we've gotten away from the COVID a little bit, but it all sort of comes back to COVID, because a lot of this stuff, you know, we're talking about the election rules changes and everything that was done with the lockdowns, it's all based on COVID. Or at least COVID was used as the justification. So, you know, the tentacles of the COVID sort of totalitarianism have just reached into every aspect of society, unfortunately.
Yeah, they tried this year with, you know, don't go trick. Oh, now it's okay to trick or treat, but don't get together at Thanksgiving and be careful at Christmas. Well, they did it last year, and I think it was pretty simple. They don't want people talking about this stuff at the table, because people are going to realize, why are we locked down anyway? Well, this year they sort of lost momentum on that.
Real quick on sports, which has happened of itself and what we all love. And this was COVID was used, I think, as a way to go after sports and football in particular, because, you know, you joke around. Remember the line from the Robert Downey character in Back to School about football's a crypto-fascist metaphor for war. Well,
yeah.
It turns out there's a lot of people out there that believe that. And,
yeah.
and they were able to use this as, because they don't like football, because football's not politically correct. It's violent.
Yeah.
And it's basically, you know, too macho and stuff. There's a lot of people out there that have secret, that harbored secret
hatred,
you know, resentment towards that sport and other sports. And they use that to shut things down in the name of COVID. Now, a lot of people just got scared. They're scared to death about it. But there's this more sinister motivation, I think, that was going on in a lot of this stuff. And it was directed at sports in a big way in 2020. And finally in 2021. Remember how they were sucking, holding their breath, Fauci, and just going crazy when they opened up the 2021 football season with filled stadiums and no one's wearing masks? It was like, oh, my God, how terrible can you be? And nothing happened. Nothing happened as far as there's no evidence that there was any sort of super spreading from that. It was just, and you lost basically 2020. What little bit of a college football season in particular we had was pathetic. And it was all because of the COVID lockdown mentality.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, now, some people will say that the left hates football because it's barbaric. I think I look the other way.
Well, yeah, they always felt that way.
No, but the way I look at it is, I mean, the Ivy League doesn't really count when it comes to football, but in the other sports, they, you know, they still compete and all that, hockey and stuff. But I think I look at it this way. It's not so much that they don't like the sport. It's that they want the money that comes with it. I mean, college football is an absolute cash cow for the top, you know, 50% of the teams. You know, it, not in any other sport do you have at least 50% of the teams that do or schools that make good money in college football. They see that. I mean, why do you think, you know, so many of them were pushing bills, Cory Booker and people like that were pushing bills for it. But yeah, the COVID on top of it made it easy because then they could just say, but you're not even protecting them from COVID either. You know, they made it sound like all of a sudden, like they didn't care about the athletes. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, the guise under which they will use, say those things and push those things is nothing short of miraculous in that somebody thinks that way. I mean, unbelievable really would be the better term. I mean, they really think like that.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, did I see here that Colorado is getting rid of their mask mandates now?
Yeah, the Denver area, the city of Denver and several of the surrounding counties where they've had mask mandates in place, including the county where I'm at, most of them are going to be getting rid of them in the next couple of days. My particular county, which is Jefferson County, in just west of Denver, they're going to be meeting tomorrow to decide whether it's going to be maintained. And since it looks like Denver and several other of the local counties around Denver are getting rid of their mask mandates, I think also up in Fort Collins, which is where Colorado State is, Larimer County, they're going to do that too. I would suspect that Jefferson's probably going to join in. We'll have to see. I think the only one that's not going to get rid of their mask mandates is, you guessed it, Boulder County.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah,
People's Republic. Let me ask you this, did
their weed shops ever close down? Those stayed open, I'll bet.
Oh, no. And the liquor stores, you know, couldn't shut them down. The restaurants were closed.
Yeah, Rose,
but the
restaurants and
bars remained open.
Well, you know what? I have one sister that lives in Pennsylvania, and they actually had to drive to New Jersey, I think it was, to get alcohol, or Delaware one time.
They closed liquor stores too.
Well, and those are state-run liquor stores in Pennsylvania. So yeah, they had to drive.
I think throughout the whole thing, the liquor stores in most places have remained open, even in the bluest states.
Oh yeah,
states.
Yeah.
They shut down the bars. But, you know.
But no, they in where I live in Florida, they actually, you know, some of the places, you know, said, you know what, we normally don't allow restaurants to sell carry out alcohol. Well, we'll forego that rule, and they let them do it. So obviously they understood the value of that. You know, I think this is where I knew that people were over it, and I can't believe that it's taken this long for it to break. But about a month or so after it all started, it was kind of a nice weekend. So we got together with some friends at a little public park, and we thought, you know, just be three couples just sitting there having a fun time, and we would sit socially distant, and we would just have a drink and talk. And this was a Saturday. The mandates were being lifted, the lockdown, whatever you want to call it, were being lifted the following Monday, so 2 days beforehand. So we thought we'd just go up, and we figured we were going to be the only people there. There had to be 1,500 or 2,000 people in this park. And people were hugging. People were sitting together on blankets. I mean, they were, you know. And I remember driving up and saying, whoa, nobody's following this. And my wife just said, yeah, you know why? People are over it. You know, that was 2 months into it.
Yep.
People were over it. People were over it. And you know what? Somehow it has still taken us this long to send the message to our quote unquote leadership that we're over it. I mean, that's kind of a disconnect.
And if you remember during the George Floyd protests in the summer of 2020, just a few months after the lockdown started, and every major American city for weeks was jammed to the gills with people packed in. We never heard anything about COVID protocol at that time.
Yeah. And in fact, evidently,
some politicians even said that they shouldn't apply because of the cause. You know, I guess the COVID respected, if the cause was right, you know, you weren't going to get COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, the hypocrisy has always been stunning. You know, look at Newsom, right, with that French Laundry episode.
And just recently, they showed the picture. Yeah, but the picture of Newsom with, I think it was with Magic Johnson at some event with their masks
on.
Yeah,
he's still doing it.
Yeah.
And Pelosi, you know, not wearing a mask and having them open up a closed down hair salon so she could get treated.
Yeah, and guess what? She blamed the owner, and the owner, of course, eventually had to close down. I mean, think about that for a second. That somebody, a politician who's caught in that, who doesn't apologize, who doesn't...
And she had no shame about it. Yeah.
Who doesn't even say, look, I was wrong, but you know what, folks? I got to admit, I just needed this. She couldn't even – the pressure was on that the salon owner had to close her doors. I mean, think about it. A woman that would allow that to happen or that would perpetrate that is the Speaker of the House of our country. Think about that. I mean, that could happen and that we could let that happen and that she's not going to pay a price for it is really remarkable. It really is. So –
By the way, I'm seeing a headline here on Fox or on I think it's on Newsmax saying talking about how fake news is. This gets back to what we're talking about. Fake news is totally ignoring this Hopkins report that we've spent a lot of time talking about.
Well, that doesn't
shock
me.
They don't
want
to acknowledge it. Yeah,
no.
Yeah, it's shocking.
And you know the real funny thing there is, you know, Johns Hopkins is not exactly known for being. You know, conservative, you know, the conservative.
A hotbed of reactionaries, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So just makes you wonder. So anyway, hey, I've got to run.
Oh, well.
So, but sure. Thanks for being on and thanks for the info. This is, at some point we're going to have to take it all back. I mean, we're just going to have to be willing to step up and say no more. You know, I mean, we have to.
Exactly.
Literally march down and do it. So, but hopefully it may take
an election to do it.
Yeah, it will. But as T. Bodie said in the chat room, guess what? Hold them all to account. You know, just taking back the House or the Senate or both is only part of the problem. You know, is only part of the solution. You know, we then got to hold those people to their feet to the fire to make sure, you know, they do what we voted them in to do. So. Anyway, well, I got to close out. So, you going to watch the game tomorrow night?
Oh yeah, I'll give him a try, but I'm not too optimistic at Columbus.
Yeah, I'm not either. That just doesn't seem like a very good game for us.
It was a tough loss Monday night.
Yeah, Monday shouldn't have happened. It just shouldn't have happened. So,
yeah,
that's the way it goes. So, anyway, okay, hey man, we'll talk to you later. Have a good weekend and stay safe.
Always a pleasure, Hank. Thanks.
Thanks, man. Bye. Okay, so there we go. Hawkeye Mike bringing the information, the Johns Hopkins study, and as he points out, mainstream media is either paying it no mind or is simply suppressing it, not putting it out there. So, you know, I guess we kind of knew this, that lockdowns, especially a year and a half of it, wasn't going to be the solution, that it wasn't going to save lives, and it wasn't going to certainly wasn't going to help our economy. So knowing that going forward, our solution is to change the makeup of our leadership, local level, state level, federal level. And the other solution then is to hold them accountable. When, you know, it's difficult enough to hold an opposition party candidate or incumbent to account. It's never easy to do that. And especially now with the vindictiveness of some of them, you worry what could happen because of it. What would be the consequences? Well, at some point we've got to decide that the consequences, no matter what they are worth fighting against or fighting for. In the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. I hope the weather's good where you are. If you got a lot of snow, enjoy it. If you got a lot of no snow, enjoy that as well. Enjoy time with your families, with your pets. And, of course, with your teams. And, of course, thanks to Mrs. Hank and enjoy time with your wife. Thanks to Mrs. Hank and our little Aussie for being here as well. And thanks to you all for being here. I saw Sue in the phone room, Mike, of course, my big sister, two numbers that I don't recognize, T. Bodie and Indy Hawk were in the chat room. And also be thinking of Vito. I think cut his show, did a shorter show the other night because he wasn't feeling well. I think nothing major, but he just, you know, he was just kind of – and he was doing the show by himself. But be thinking about Vito and give them a listen next week. And, of course, the other shows as well. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We are always here. Check the runner to see what's going on. Tomorrow night, Paul Sutliff at 6 o'clock. Paul always has good stuff. Paul's an author. Paul knows folks on the inside, so to speak, of what's going on. So give him a listen. And then Friday at noon, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. And don't forget, you can always come in and listen to a show after the fact. They are in the archive, so do that as well. And check out some of the other shows across Blog Talk Radio Network. As I said, Dave and G-Ski Rocks, don't know if they're on hiatus right now. Tim Tapp, Annie with Southern Sense, Joseph Gibson. Give them all a listen, folks. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. And until next week, have a good one. Send you off with a little Jeff Beck. Good night, my friends. Be safe and still have a good time.
Bye-bye.